I'd be happy to. Thank God for pauses, during which you've doubtless forgot those other guys. I will try to be quite different. I will be impersonal, decent, orderly, disciplined, obscure, unamusing, not even interesting. And I would like to write fiction the way Wittgenstein did philosophy. What a wish. I wonder what Freud would think of such a wish. I mention his name here not because he was the most important personal as opposed to textual influence in my professional life, but he was. But I mention him, of course, because he was Austrian, the center of that fabled Vienna circle, and the only kind of saint our secular world any longer permits. He was, as I thought I found him at any rate, the saint of his subject. You will notice, however, already how different I am. I've mentioned, in connection with Austria, Wittgenstein. My colleagues mentioned pork. When I met Wittgenstein, I was still a student. I had no style, no technique, no theory, no talent. I had only dreams of someday having some of that. I had, however, the great good fortune for a short period of time to watch and to listen to Wittgenstein philosophize. That is to say, to watch him in the act of thinking, in the process of thinking, for that was his technique. I remember my first experience of his presence. He was, of course, at the time I knew him, already dying of cancer. He was an old man, frail. I remember a long scarf around his neck, like one I saw today. He seemed to have trousers the wrong length. He moved into the room where we were to be instructed by him, and sat down at the end of a conference seminar table, and we were primed. One person had been appointed to ask Wittgenstein a question. Now, this was the way one began. Wittgenstein waited. The person primed did not pump, and someone else who hadn't been let in on the story asked Wittgenstein a question. But it was about Aristotle. And Wittgenstein's face fell forlornly, miserably into his hands. His hands and his head fell upon the table. We thought all was lost, and he would soon shuffle out. We would all, of course, be totally disgraced. In haste, then, the person who had been appointed to ask the sensible question, instead of the silly one that was asked about Aristotle, blurted out, "Professor Wittgenstein, how do I know this is a hand?" His head rose out of his face. Finally, an interesting question. Now, in fact, as we all knew, that question had been proposed by the English philosopher G.E. Moore, whom, of course, Wittgenstein professed never to have read, although he spent some time in close proximity. And he had gone over this question many times. Nevertheless, he began to ruminate, I think is the best word, on this strange problem, what is a hand? How do I know it? And then he began to think. And what I, who was very skeptical about all of this, began to watch was a genius in the act of thinking. And what made Wittgenstein so special for me was not simply his conclusions, which had, of course, a great deal of interest, but the way in which he arrived at them. He thought each time as if no one had ever thought about this problem or the problem that faced him before. He thought haltingly. He thought in great confusion. He backed. He squirmed. He berated himself. He was in actual agony. It could have easily been a show. It was not. What was convincing was following the mind in its procedures without the least sign of pretension or pride, plenty of which he had when he was not philosophizing. I had never seen a naked mind before. It's much sexier than a naked body. He proceeded to undress that mind with absolute honesty, total fearlessness, and I realized, listening to him, that in addition to the genius, which I, of course, having read him, already knew he had character. Character, that is to say, with respect to his calling. Absolute, uncompromising devotion to his ideal, the truth. Not since Spinoza has philosophy had such a saint. And there is a great deal of similarity between Wittgenstein, I think, and Spinoza. Now, I don't, of course, compare myself in anything to this great man, but I learned what one ought as an artist to try to be, however often one failed. To have total loyalty to aesthetic form as he gave his loyalty to the logical one. Nothing else at all mattered to him. Nothing whatever counted but the integrity of the completed thought. Now, when I, of course, began to write myself, to write seriously, I realized that it wasn't the meager talent which I had which would accomplish anything, and that a writer had to have a certain kind of character in order to succeed. This character, of course, I quickly discovered I did not have at all. This, of course, has been one of the gloomier discoveries of my life. And the discovery was indeed that I was always distracted by life itself. And so part of the time, a great part of the time, I write about characters who, in a sense, are members of what, in my new novel, I'm calling the Party of the Disappointed People. We have armbands, PDP, on them. The Party of the Disappointed People, people who were never able to realize that conviction, that dedication. And so I'd like to read a passage from a story that's already been mentioned, In the Heart of the Country, which begins, I think, to illustrate that dissatisfaction in the narrator. There could be two sections, one of them having to do with one of the central distractions, and the other having to do with the narrator's idea about art. The narrator here is a failed, always failed, poet and teacher who is living in a small town called B. This section's called Education. There is mentioned in this section a school teacher, a former lover, and a neighbor named Mrs. Desmond, who comes often to borrow sugar and drive the narrator crazy. Buses, like great orange animals, move through the early light to school. There the children will be taught to read and warned against communism by Miss Janet Jakes. That's not her name. Her name is Helen something, Scott or James. A teacher 20 years, she's now worn fine and smooth and has a face, Wilfred says, like a mail order axe. Her voice is hoarse and she has a cough, for she screams abuse. The children stare, their faces blank. This is the 13th week. They are used to it. "You will all," she shouts, "you will all draw pictures of me." No, she is a Mrs., someone's Mrs. And in silence, they set to work while Miss Jakes jabs hairpins in her hair. Wilfred says an axe, but she has those rimless, tinted glasses, graying hair, an almost dimpled chin. I must concentrate. I must stop making up things. I must give myself to life. Let it mold me. That's what they say in Wisdom's Monthly Digest every day. Enough, enough. You've been at it long enough. And the children rise formally a row at a time to present their work to her desk. No, she wears rims. It's her chin that's dimpleless. Well, it will take more than a tablespoon of features to sweeten that face. So she grimly shuffles their sheets, examines her reflection crayoned on them. I would not dare allow a child to put a line around me. Though now and then she smiles like a nick in the blade, in the end these drawings depress her. I could not bear it. How can she ask that anyone draw me? Her anger's lit, that's why she does it, flame. There go her eyes, the pink in her glasses brightens, dims. She is a pumpkin. And her rage is breathing like the candle in. No, she shouts, no, the cartoon trembling. No, John Moak, John Stuart Mock, this will not do. The picture flutters from her fingers. You've made me too muscular. I work on my poetry. I remember my friends, associates, my students by their name. Their names are Maypop, Dormouse, Upsidaisy. Their names are Gladiolus, Callow Bladder, Prince and Princess Olio, Hieronymus, Cardinal Mum Mum, Mr. Fishu, the Silken Howdah, Spot. Sometimes you're Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. It is perpetually summer. Your buttocks are my pillow. We are adrift on a raft. Your back is our river. Sometimes you are Major Barbara, sometimes a goddess who kills men in battle. Sometimes you are soft like a shower of water. You are bread in my mouth. I do not work on my poetry. I forget my friends, associates, my students, and their names. Gramophone, blowgun, pickle, serenade. Marge the barge, arena, Uberhaupt. Dr. Dildo, the fog machine. For I am now in B, in Indiana, out of job and out of patience, out of love and time and money, out of bread and out of body, in a temper, Mrs. Desmond, out of tea. So shut your fist up, bitch, you bag of death. Go bang another door. Go die, my dearie. Die, life, death, old lady. Spill your breath. Fall over like a frozen board. Gray hair grows from the nose of your mind. You are a skull already, memento mori. The foreskin retracts from your teeth. Will your plastic gums last longer than your bones and color their grinning? And is your twat still hazel hairy, or are you bald as a ditch? Bitch. 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 I wanted to be famous, but you bring me age, my emptiness. Was it that which I thought would balloon me above the rest? Love, Where are you? Love me. I want to rise so high, I said, that when I shit, I won't miss anybody.